Welcome to Dakota Midday. I am Kara Hetland, and good Thursday afternoon to everyone. We're going to speak today with South Dakota Secretary of State Chantel Krebs. We'll also talk with former U.S. Senator Larry Pressler. But first, we're going to start talk with reporter, interactive producer, and filmmaker Todd Melby. Todd, thanks so much for joining us today on Dakota Midday.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
So you have a new documentary looking at the black gold boom, and that's looking at the oil boom and bust in North Dakota. Is there really a bust?
Pretty much. If you look at the drilling rig list, a year ago there were 190 rigs going on in the Bakken area of North Dakota, and today there are only 67 drilling rigs. So it's about down by two-thirds as far as the rigs go. I mean, the wells that had already been drilled, those are still going, but... So oil production is, doing pretty much okay. But as far as the rig count goes, there's a lot less activity.
So they're not looking as much?
Well, I mean, obviously the price of oil is way down. Mm-hmm. What the Saudis did about a year ago, they're the main member of OPEC, and they decided that oil prices were too high and they were getting too much competition from the American shale producers, like those folks in North Dakota. So they decided to keep their production up instead of, declining and keeping oil prices high. So therefore, there's just too much oil on the market right now. The price has dropped by about half, and therefore the number of drilling rigs in America has dropped big time too.
And so this documentary that we're talking about today is how many in your series?
Well, this is the first television documentary in the series, though there have also been two interactive documentaries, so things you can watch and interact with online. So yeah, I've been busy.
And this focuses just on the Native American perspective and the oil boom.
Right. So I started Black Gold Boom back in 2012, and I'm a public radio producer and print reporter initially, and so that's what I focused on, was doing those kinds of stories. But I've always valued photography and film, and so I wanted to collaborate with people who were really good at it. So, early on with the public radio stories, I brought in a photographer who could also do some video, and we made some YouTube videos that ended up being made into this interactive thing. Mm-hmm. And then, there was a big competition for a group out of San Francisco called ITBS, and they fund documentaries for public television. And so I applied and got it. And so it was a big opportunity for me to experiment in a new medium, to make a movie, which I'd never done before. And it was also a big opportunity for me to tell a story that I hadn't told before about the Bakken boom. And that's, of course, the story of the Mandan, Hadatsa, and Arikara people, the folks of three affiliated tribes. The media has pretty much ignored this story, and I knew it was happening, and I had ignored it too, and I didn't want to ignore it anymore, so I made this movie about it.
Well, it's a difficult story to get your arms wrapped around, I would think.
Well, it is, especially as a white guy from Western North Dakota. I hadn't spent any time on reservations. I didn't know any Native folks, and I'd go around and talk to white folks in North Dakota and I'd say, hey, I want to report more about Native folks. Do you know anybody I can talk to? And people would just kind of look at me like, no, I don't know anybody over there, sorry. So I think there's still lots of segregation in North Dakota between white folks and Native folks. And so what I did was I collaborated with some Native producers out of Minnesota, one of whom was a tribal member at three affiliated tribes, and so I went there without a camera and for weeks before we started filming, just to get to know folks and know a little bit more about the culture and figure out who to interview once we did come back with cameras.
And how did you decide? I mean, you put it together strictly just in the Native voices, and you didn't insert yourself as a journalist at all.
Yeah. No, I didn't want it to be like, the voice of God narration. this is happening, and then this is happening, and then this is happening. So I wanted it to be, from the point of view of the people who were being interviewed. So it was really difficult to do, but I had a fantastic editor, and, thanks to his work and collaborating with him, we were able to, put together something that I think works pretty well.
Did you know you were going to have that as your technique as your finished product going in, or no?
I'd done a lot of non-narrated radio stories, which I really like because it gets the reporter out of the way and lets people speak, and you kind of hear people unvarnished on the radio, mm-hmm. which I really like because you know, especially in the Bakken, you know, these are working class folks working oil rig jobs, or they're people in small towns who would be affected by the boom. And I just think, I just like to get my college educated self out of the way of those stories and let people speak for themselves.
Well, and in a TV documentary, it's easy to watch and see, and you don't necessarily have to paint the picture because you can see it.
Right, exactly. Right, right. So we were able to you know, see Marty Youngbear. He's opposed to the oil boom. At the time, he was living just outside of Newtown, and, you know, so we see him at the feed store picking up feed for his horses, and, you know, we see, you know, kids in the his kids in the back of his pickup truck, and, you know, so we see all of this, and so that really helps.
And I'm just wondering if this, knowing that you were going to do, you know, the non-narrated documentary, how did you then conduct your interviews to get them, you know, to get the answers that you got?
Well, you know, it's, you know, journalism, just like any other journalism, just, you know, I was asking open-ended questions about what people thought and, you know, what their feelings were about what was happening. But then there was also a lot of just trying to be a fly on the wall and being there with them when things were happening, you know, being with Marty as he's, you know, in the pickup with his kids, or being with a guy named Jason Baker who had just moved back to the res from Fargo. I mean, he's a college-educated engineer, and he moved back to Mandaree to start up an oil field services business with his father. And, you know, there he was at the volunteer fire department in Mandaree, and they were just, you know, starting that volunteer fire department. And so, you know, we had just video of them training and learning how to use the equipment, and you know, various truck drivers that we featured in the film. So there was a lot of kind of, we're just there as people are doing their thing.
Some of the images that I took away in watching this documentary came, you know, in the form of kind of their sound bites, where they talked about sovereignty by the barrel. That one just struck me.
Yeah, no, I love that. So Missouri River Resources is the name of the tribal-owned oil company. So that's the oil company that's owned by three affiliated tribes. And that's their tagline. You go into their offices in Newtown, North Dakota, you know, and they have a big map of Fort Berthold, and then the slogan, sovereignty by the barrel, because that's how they view it. That's how the tribal leaders view the potential of oil to help their people. So this is a way for them to drill their own wells, get the money at a higher rate than if they were to lease it out to another oil company, and eventually provide health care and education for all their tribal members.
And you painted the picture that with the oil boom came a new fire department, some innovative businesses, the roadside knives kind of stuck with me too.
Yes, that is Bobcat John. I did a radio story on Bobcat John, you know, when I first started doing the whole oil boom thing out there. And he's a bearded white guy from Oregon or Utah, and he likes to make his own knives and sell knives, and oil field workers seem to like to buy knives. And so there he was selling his knives.
Out of a trailer.
Of a trailer, right. And they called him Bobcat John because he used to own a bobcat, like an actual animal bobcat, that he once brought to the res, and they told him he couldn't have it, so he had to go home.
Hmm.
That's an actual true story. I saw photos of Bobcat. Yeah.
And then you had you know, the survivor, the African American family,
right?
That you spent a lot of time with.
Yeah. That's Elsie Adjustment-Cue, and Elsie's from suburban Chicago. And I met her at a food stand outside of Watford City, North Dakota. And she was buying some Cajun food, and of course she's got that Cajun sounding last name, and, you know, she's originally, you know, from Cajun African-American stock. And, you know, I just got on well with Elsie. You know, she's divorced. Her husband, before she got divorced, didn't want her to drive a truck, and she's always wanted to drive trucks. And so when she heard about the oil boom, she moved out to North Dakota to drive truck.
Well, say which kind of truck.
Well, big trucks, you know, the big semis. And also she was driving a septic truck. Yeah. Yeah, and then she brought her teenage kids from suburban Chicago. So we've got video of her kids who clearly are, you know, are a minority in Western North Dakota, and they may very well have been the only African American kids in Watford City, or one of the very few for sure. And so they were talking about, you know, the difference of what it's like to live in Western North Dakota compared to suburban Chicago. And I think the big point that Lawrence made was that, you know, back in Chicago he had grass. and there at the trailer park he didn't.
There he didn't. I loved her quote, though, that she's, you have to prepare children for the world outside of the block we live in.
Yeah, no, that was fantastic. I mean, you know, her point of view is like, you know, her kids need to see more of the world than just Chicago. And by showing them Western North Dakota, they saw a whole different way of life. And she really likes it in Western North Dakota. As a matter of fact, she's still there. And you know, she loves seeing the horses in North Dakota and all the wildlife. And she just thinks it's a beautiful place.
So you really showed, you know, the good things that could happen with the money that comes from the oil boom.
Well, I mean, there's good and bad in it for sure.
Right.
And people, you know, some people see both and experience both. So, I mean, you know, one of the families that we focused on that I talked about a little bit was Jason Baker and his father, Paige. And Paige is a retired academic with a PhD, and he retired to Mandaree, his hometown. And he called up his son, Jason, you know, who's an adult who has an engineering degree from North Dakota State University in Fargo and was working as an engineer in Fargo. And he convinced his son to move back to Mandaree, and the two of them started an oil field services company. You know, they want to make life better for themselves by starting this business, and they also want to, you know, give back to their people, too.
Yeah, I liked his quote that he's still meeting bakers he didn't know he was related to.
There are so many bakers in Fort Berthold. Oh, my God. And I was at a rodeo in western Montana and met some crow people. That's the doorbell in my house, which I'll ignore. But anyway, yeah, there are lots of bakers. There's so many bakers. I say, do you know this baker or that baker? And sometimes they just say no. There are just that many.
There's that many.
Yeah.
Well, we have a sound clip from, is it Corey Spotted Bear?
Right. Yes, Corey.
Okay. Do you want to set it up just a little bit?
Yeah. So Corey and Marty, Marty Young Bear, the guy that I had talked before, they're really good friends. And they're really into their culture. And what they wanted to do was build an earth lodge in Twin Buttes, North Dakota, which is a part of the boom that didn't have oil rigs on it. It's still the quiet part. So this is an interview and short story about Corey and the earth lodge and how quiet it is in Twin Buttes.
Okay, and we'll play that audio.
West of us here, there's a big oil boom going on. The oil line stops just west of the Twin Buttes community. And here we are, just on the other side of that line. We're putting the symbol back on the land where we're flourishing again. We're chipping away in that direction.
Zeb, take those two ladders down. That looks good. That's good, guys. And then Marty, that one looks good too, where you're at. It's even with the other side. So
people ask me, what's your view? What's your take on oil? And when they allotted our land, when they first had the Dawes Allotment Act, when they had during the reservation period, and they start giving individual allotments out, and after each individual allottee got their allotment of the three affiliated tribes, they opened up the additional land and they called it Indian Surplus Land Act, and they opened it up to white settlement. A lot of the Indians got the rough land, the bad lands, and the just so happens to be a lot of minerals in those types of areas today. And what they opened up to Indian Surplus Land Act was the top agricultural land. We'll just say it, the whites, the non-Indians got that land. And so today we have minerals and people get mineral checks and mineral leases. You know, is it right or wrong, or do I feel bad about that? To see an old grandma or a family that I've always known to not have much monetarily, to have them have a nice pickup truck or to have the means to go to town or go to a Twins game, I'm okay with that part of it, you know.
What'd you say about this? Notch it shallower?
And I'm also happy that the oil line stops west of our community. No, it's quiet still. And, you know, they acknowledge that when they come here. Like, especially people from Newtown. I mean, you live right in town there. Newtown's a busy place now. You know, that's our tribal agency. And so people that come over here, different ones helped with the Earth Lodge, you know, for the powwow. They get up in the morning and you can hear some horses in that field, or you'll hear a cow calling for its calf, or you'll hear birds in the trees, and people say, I missed that.
So Corey Spotted...
My name is Richard Karp.
Corey Spotted Bear basically paints the best of both worlds.
He does. Yeah. He does indeed. And, you know, the Twin Buttes, North Dakota, because of its beauty and quiet, you know, remind me a lot of Riva, South Dakota, which is in far western South Dakota, just south of my hometown. And it's just so quiet there. But yeah, so Corey definitely saw the best of both. I mean, he saw how it affected his culture and, you know, perhaps negatively. He worried about the environmental effects, but he also saw how it was nice to have a little bit of extra cash in your pocket so you could go to a Twins game or buy a new pickup.
Right. Yeah. They gave us the land with the minerals, and now Grandma has a new truck.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So where does it stand now for the affiliated tribes in North Dakota?
So, you know, they formed their own oil company while we were making the film, and they've since started drilling. As a matter of fact, they drilled four new wells in June and July of this year. Those wells are producing oil, and they name those wells after each of the three tribes and the word nation. So the names of those wells are the Mandan, the Hidatsa, the Arikara, and Nation. So they're doing it.
And the tribal president was very much in support of this, a little giddy, even.
Yeah, he wasn't the president, but
oh.
But he was definitely on the board.
He was
definitely on the tribal board.
Okay.
That's Ken Hall. Yeah, he was giddy. I mean, he saw this as a big opportunity for the tribe. Instead of, you know, just getting 18% for royalties, he knew that if they formed their own company, they would immediately get 26%, which is what they're getting, plus once the company starts to make, you know, money, they'll be paying dividends to the tribe. So, you know, they really see this as a big opportunity to diversify their economy. So it's not just ranching and casino money.
And Todd Melby, what's next for you as a journalist?
Well, I'm very attracted to stories from the Dakotas. You know, it gives me a chance to go home. So I would like to make another movie and perhaps pursue other oil-related stories, though the boom is pretty much bust at the moment, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see. You know, I'm curious about lots of stuff.
Okay. Todd, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on Dakota Midday today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.